from stpetecatalyst.com.
Well, I'm Bill DeYoung, and this is the Catalyst Sessions. Yet again, you guessed that because you're here, and we are live tonight, which is very cool. My guest tonight is Jared Fox, who is the director of production for American Stage, 43 years young. I think he may be a little younger than that, but American Stage is 43 years and doing exemplary work to this day. So let me bring on Jared. Are you? I see JF. Does that mean you're there?
That's me. Hello.
There he is.
Hi.
The magic of technology.
It is the magic.
How are you, my friend?
I'm okay. Yeah, we're doing all right. You know, virtual's keeping us busy over at American Stage. So
yeah, you're starting new shorts tomorrow. Is that right? Thursday
yes.
to Thursday. So yeah. First of all, tell us all what New Shorts is. I mean, we had Shakespeare Light last month. So what is this? Again?
Sure. So New Shorts are new plays, new short plays just two plays a night. So every Thursday this month, there'll be two new plays that will perform nightly. And then you know, they're different playwrights, and the playwrights are going to be with us, which is super cool. So all of the playwrights will join us after the performance. You can chat with them and we can talk about the pieces. So that's pretty cool.
So you do, are they each about 30 minutes? Are they each about 10?
They're about 10 minutes, yeah.
Oh, they're they're literally shorts.
Literally shorts, yeah. So they're about 10 minutes each. There's a couple that are a little bit longer. So the overall goal is that the evening's, you know, done in an hour. So we're going to have a specialty cocktail that everyone's going to hopefully make at home. We can all drink a cocktail together. And then there's a guest MC, and there's going to be some theater trivia beforehand. So really about making it more of a communal experience.
It's the American,
having a good time.
The American Stage communal experience.
Exactly.
What goes into the virtual production? I mean, I with regard to the things that you do, mm-hmm. watching the Shakespeare stuff, I can see where it's directed. And watching, I think it was Othello, going, oh my God, they've actually memorized these lines. Or at least if they were reading them, they were doing incredible. Okay, you don't want to spoil it. Don't pull the curtain back.
I was supposed to magic for it. That's
funny. They look great, man. I mean,
What
goes into that to producing these things?
Sure. So Shakespeare Light, you know, we rehearsed for about a week. So that's pretty fast to do a Shakespeare play in 1 week. And, you know, it's really about learning this platform, our new venue that we have right now, which is these little Zoom boxes. So really figuring out what the software is like, seeing how we can break it, seeing what we can do to, you know, make it work how us theatrical artists work, and doing our best to do that. So, you know, figuring all that out. Actors, generally what they do is they split their screen. So you've got a little Zoom bar at the top and their script is on the same screen. So that when they're looking at the camera, they're eye line doesn't change all that much. So
Sheet, man, you just spoiled it for me.
I did. I mean, some scenes are memorized if there's more action required, but that way the actors can focus and be like, all right, I'm going to memorize this. Now the shorts, however, we are going to be memorized so that these will not be reads at all. So these were going to be off-book, as we call it.
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, Jared, though, people are not in the same room together. You know, and I've spoken with several actors, and Kristen Clifford was on here too, talking about, you know, that theater is a communal experience, not only for the audience, but for the performers and people like yourself. It's all this, you know, it's all together. That's got to be weird. And don't all the rules go out the window of how you produce something like that?
Yeah, I mean, we try to follow as much as we can our process that we normally have. We have breakout rooms so that actors can get together and chat and talk and, you know, have form a little bit of a family first, and then rehearse in the same Zoom webinar format that we're going to perform in. So they're rehearsing in space. And we just, I know it's crazy. You know,
rehearsing,
we take the same equity breaks. We do all of it. Yeah.
I'm going to write a story and use that as a headline. I think rehearsing in space.
That's basically.
I was going to say, what popped into my head right then was, oh, what a great story for the Catalyst. I'll go down and watch them do this, but no, everybody's in a different room, in a different house, in a different part of town. There's nothing communal about it at all, except the final product.
Mm-hmm. It's the final product. We're all watching something live together, you know, watching it be performed live. And if something goes wrong, it goes wrong, and everyone sees it. We can't fix it. That's the danger of live theater, and being able to do that virtually is still cool.
So are you there during the rehearsals with the director and the actors too?
During the week, I pop in and out because most likely I'm somewhere doing, making media for the pieces. So all of those intro videos that get created, all of the soundtracks, all of the sound effects and other interstitials, as we call them, I'm editing all of that. So I'm reaching way back to my film background and I've kind of become an editor again. I mean, I always used to design the projections on stage. So that was one of the things I did anyway. So now it's just sort of translating that once again to this digital media that we're in. So, and then I watch a good run. I make sure that all the camera angles are set up right. Try to fix lighting with people. We work on these virtual backgrounds. That's my version of scenery now, right? I've got virtual backgrounds I can play with. We try and do our best to recreate that theatrical experience virtually. And it's like, okay, everything you learn, throw it out the window and make a new thing.
How frustrating is it for you? I mean, there's really no hands-on anything.
Yeah, no, it's very difficult to make anything tangible at the moment. You know, sometimes we have to build duplicate props. Those are fun, so they can be passed from screen to screen.
I saw a little of that Romeo and Juliet. That was very cool.
Yeah, so there might be like six of one thing if the entire cast touches it. So little tricks like that. But yeah, it is a little difficult to all of a sudden just be not creating these real experiences. Because, you know, normally you walk through the door at American Stage and we create that whole world right off the bat. And that's something we just can't do.
It is about creating worlds. When you make multiple copies of a prop, though, how do you get it out to the actors? Does somebody wearing a mask like, run out there and leave it on their porch and say, it's here? You know, sometimes, it's on your porch.
Yeah, sometimes if our actors are local, absolutely, we do door drop-off. Or we have to ship them, you know? We had actors, I think, in Pittsburgh and some other places, too, in California. So knowing what we need ahead of time, and giving the time to send it out, you know, across country, wherever we need to send it. Or we can, you know, online order it and have it shipped directly to them. So there's all kinds of
The actors aren't all local who are appearing in this?
No, like Peter Callender, who was in Othello, he was in California. So I had to send him props in California.
Because Peter's here all the time. I didn't realize.
He is, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so we, you know, cast is all over the place, which is great. So that is one thing we can do. We don't have to pay for travel for these. So we can cast, you know, from the entire country. We can cast anybody who's been in a show, you know, before with us and bring them back in a virtual way.
Well, to cover this one last time, I mean, do you feel in a way that you are doing a little miniature version of your job, or do you feel like, Jesus, this isn't even close?
It is a little miniature version of my job. Yeah, that's absolutely an accurate step. And fast, you know, you don't put on a Shakespeare play in a week. That's crazy. So it was super fast. And really, you have to focus in on, all right, what's important? What are the things we really want to do? Because those are things we can execute. Everything else, hopefully, people can costume themselves from something they've got in their closet or you know, what can we do without? But yeah, absolutely. You're still coordinating with all of these actors who now we're forcing to become technicians. We're like, great, learn this platform. You're going to turn your own camera on. You're going to find your lighting. You're going to solve your own computer problems.
Find your light and sell it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of coordination that has to happen, and it has to happen quickly. So still doing, you know, a lot of what my job used to entail, just in the micro way.
Micro way. Yeah. Hands off way.
Yeah.
Again, just to cover that, I want to move away from this, but I mean, sure. I'm playing devil's advocate for a second. I mean, doing the Shakespeare stuff, did the screens ever freeze? Did anybody go offline in the middle of a scene? I mean, all the things that come with this kind of technology.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in rehearsal, yes, we had thunderstorms that would knock out, you know, a character. So you got to be prepared. So our directors were always on script, ready to read the lines if we needed to keep going.
Wow.
If we lost somebody or something like that. Yeah. Or people forget to turn their cameras on or their microphones and they'll start speaking just like Zoomings we all experienced.
Unmute.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we had to figure out Shakespearean ways to say that, you know.
Oh my God.
What saith my lord? I can't hear you. Yeah, you know. So doing all
speak
those.
Loudly, my lord.
Yeah, speak loudly, my lord. So things like that. So yeah, you're still dealing with all the crazy things that Zoom does to all of us regularly.
Let's pretend for a second that in a normal situation, that it's a normal world. And let's talk to me about, in a very you know, simple way, the folks at home, what does a director of production do? That's the easiest way to say it. So let's talk, let's make sure everybody knows what you do, and then we'll go through some examples.
Great. Yeah, so at the director of production American Stage, what I do is basically coordinate all of our tech department. So I'm the head of the tech department, and I coordinate with all of any designers that we hire, coordinate with the directors and the producers, and just make sure we're all playing nice and making sure that we're all working towards the same goal to achieve the same storytelling atmosphere we want to tell. So it's really about working with those directors, really digging in and finding out what their visions are. And working with Stephanie Gallard, who chose a theatrical piece. What are the main things she wants to bring to the top? What does she wants to rise to the top? What themes do we really want to hit hard on? And how can we do that in a subliminal technical way too, so that when you walk into that theater, you're being told a story that you may not even realize you're being told. And so that's my job. You know, and also, of course, you know, managing budgets and doing all the administrative work to make sure that we're executing on time, on budget.
All the fun stuff.
Yeah, all the spreadsheet stuff too. So that's the job.
Do you do set design as well? I mean, we're talking about the look, you know, as we were talking about before we went live, what people see and hear.
Yeah.
The final thing, you know, here's the way the story's being presented to you. You kind of oversee that. In other words, you're not the show's director.
Right.
You're not obviously the performers, but when I walk in the theater, I'm seeing what you kind of, how much set design do you do?
Sure. So, I started American Stage as the prop master, and I did that for 4 or 5 years, I think. So that's where I started with American Stage. So look and feel has kind of always been what my job is. And as a set designer as well, I started set designing a couple years after I started my job. So, I design. I think I'm contracted right now to design 2 shows a year scenically, and then some other design, whatever that may be, throughout the season. So, because I also design the projections. A lot of times I'll do all the projections in a show.
Yeah.
And occasionally I'll do costumes as well. So.
And props. You mentioned that you're the property master. You still do that, don't you?
I do. I supervise a props team now, which is great. So I don't have to do it all by myself anymore because there's just a lot to do. I've got a great props team, prop artisans, and that's a great team when they're here. So they're sort of learning. This is their first season having that team. So that's great.
I think people probably don't even understand how important that is. You know, I've done a little bit of community theater, and there's always a card table in the back with all the props all marked off. Carefully. Don't mess with the props, you know.
Don't mess with the props. Actors freak out when you mess with the props. Yeah.
So absolutely. That's very important. And I also, just today, I watched your puppet making how-to video.
Oh, yeah.
You are a man of many talents. You're from California, is this right? And did you say you had a film background? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I was raised in California, went to Oregon for high school, and then back to California for college, where I went to Loyola Marymount University. And all throughout high school, I did theater. I mean, from day one, first play, freshman year, and I did every play all throughout high school. But then when I went to college, I said, you know, I should make some money. Money would be good. And so chose to be in the film industry because I thought, hey, there'd be money there. And so I enjoyed that, but I was predominantly in the art department in college, you know, always helping people dress up a film location or finding props and doing a lot of that stuff.
Are we talking student films? Or are we talking like Steven Spielberg?
Here? Well, no, student films for sure.
Yeah. Somebody has to do that work. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. So student films and, or, you know, guerrilla films and things like that. So, and I still do independent films every now and again here, work on that as the art department or the art director. And that just really translated back into theater when I decided, hey, film's not for me, and I would rather just go back to my roots of theater where passion is. And that's what I started doing. And so when I moved to Florida, I worked at the Guerrilla Theater in Tampa. I was their prop master for a long time. Uh-huh. And then I worked on a show called Woman in Black, which I love that show, with Scott Cooper. And he was the set designer and formed a really great bond with him. And he was the prop master at American Stage. And then it was time for him to move on and run the SPC theater department. He really recommended me, and I took his position.
whose job is it to, what's the expression, when the buck stops here? You know, when like somebody, you know, your costume designer comes in with something that, who's the person that says, I don't like that, that doesn't work? I mean, you have all these elements, different people who's, you know, who have different jobs coming in to form a cohesive whole. But who has final say on what works and what sucks or what?
Right.
Is that the director? Is that you? Is that Stephanie?
It's all three. Yeah, it really is all three. I mean, if the director doesn't like it, obviously we scrap it and we try and make as many alterations and changes as we can. But I always see my position as well as brand standard, you know, and is this American stage quality? Is it meeting the requirements of the story? Is it cohesive with everything else that's going on? And so, yeah, that's part of my design eye that I like to apply to everything and make sure that we're just all telling the same story and that everything's working together, not against each other. So,
yeah, what's your personal process like? I mean, obviously, what you read the script first, like, okay.
What? Generally step one, yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess. But I mean,
right.
What's it like?
So I read the script first, absolutely. And then generally I try and book a meeting with that director as soon as I can. Because I want to know what their vision is, you know, what's inspiring them. So maybe they've got some images that really just bring them into the story, and I want to be able to tap into that and see what elements I can pull. And then from that, I do the same thing. I go and I just look at images of, so, you know, if we're Viet Gong, let's say, what are the images of the time period of the story? So I did a lot of research on protest posters and what that looked like. And then that took me into a world of propaganda posters too. And what are those, you know, conflicting forces, what does that look like? But I also wanted to elevate the comic book elements of the story, because there are these heroes that are traveling across America on motorcycles. And so really just start pulling historic images, stylized images and things like that. And when you find inspiration, building upon that. And so I do create, which was a lot of designers do, they create like a mood board, you know, of great images they like and colors they like. There we go. There's gone right there. Yeah. And pulling colors and images and essential pieces. I mean, this
was a great set, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. This one was exciting to do.
The guy with the beard was great too, by the way.
Very
funny. He played all the different roles and stuff. Very funny guy.
Yeah. He was great. He was great. So, you know, just really being able to, And having a director that was like, yeah, go for it. You know, make this story as big and bold and heroic as you want. It was very exciting to just kind of be able to break out of that. You know, it's not a living room play. You're not sitting in someone's living room. You don't have to be realistic, which means you can play.
Is that more fun for you? Because, I mean, a lot of the things, like, we're going to look at Long Day's Journey Tonight and a couple of other things in a minute, which are living room plays, I guess. You know, it looks realistic. Like it's somebody's study and library, and that is this more fun for you because you can make it whatever you think it should be?
Yeah, I do enjoy doing the more theatrical plays, the plays that, you know, potentially have to go a bunch of different locations, or just plays that can be a little bit more imaginative and representational. I love that kind of stuff. So those are definitely my bread and butter. If I have to design a kitchen, I'll design a kitchen. But being able to design something like this, like Viet Gong, was super exciting.
Did you design these bikes with no real rear wheels?
Yes, I did.
These were very cool. I mean, if people didn't see the show, you look at this photo, the bikes don't have rear wheels.
Yeah, it's just the front end of a motorcycle, because motorcycles are so heavy. And having actors like climb on and off of them was just not going to be viable. We wanted more action out of them. We were able to do just, you know, the front end of a motorcycle. And we have a great scene shop with some welders, and they were able to help me out with that and make those happen.
Did you work on Pipeline, which was another set that I thought was stunning? Really?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Pipeline was my set design. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, we're working with Peter Callender, the director, on that one. We really obviously wanted it just to feel like your typical public school that's a little bit run down, and just isn't in great shape. Also, I wanted to evoke a little bit of prison, how that architecture can be similar and why is it similar, and of course that's what the Pipeline's about.
It's unsettling too when you look at the walls and then this weird tile. And I remember you can see it back there, how, look, set pieces would come in through the walls, like the little door would lift. And the whole thing, to me, it just was unsettling. You never could sort of settle into something.
Yeah, I mean, part of that was the forced perspective I applied to it. So it was forced perspective that was like slightly off, absolutely. Yeah, and unsettling. And it sort of also had a really cool ceiling piece with lighting that kind of made you feel crushed and trapped. And so there was all these emotions that Peter was trying to evoke from the set. And so I had to figure out ways to make you feel trapped, make it feel, he really wanted the storytelling to just flow and just go to go and go. So there weren't huge scene changes. And so that is why, you know, set pieces just kind of popped out of walls and there they were.
It was very effective.
Thank you. Thank you. So, trying to make it move.
During the let me go back to the process though for a minute.
Sure.
While you're working this and saying, look what I've done, Peter, the ceiling does this. I mean, what if he says to you, you know, can you make it lower or can you make it? I mean, do you automatically, do you sit there and try and tell him this? I want it this way because you say, yeah, I'm going to, okay, if that's what you want, I'll do it.
You know, you pick and choose your battles, Bill. So
as in life, I guess.
As in life, you pick and choose your battles. Right. So if there's some piece that's like, you know, the heart of the set to me, then I might fight for it and justify it how I will. But, you know, I always build a 3D model in the computer of the set, which allows me to alter and change my designs pretty quickly. So if he said something like, I'd like the ceiling to be lower, that's great. I can do that really quickly on the computer. But once it's built, that makes it a much more difficult endeavor.
I'm not dropping that ceiling again.
Yeah, we already hung that, thanks. And we open in 3 days. So unless it's a major thing that's, you know, really preventing storytelling, we try to get all those changes ironed out in the first draft into the final. We get that final approval and then on we go because we've got to pick materials and get it built. So
this is Long Day's Journey into Night.
Yeah, beautiful set.
Now, my question for something like this would be, well, you know, O'Neill wrote this, I don't know, 100 years ago. Maybe not that long, but the point is it's been done a lot over the years. What can you bring to something like this?
I think,
I mean, isn't it also in the book? It's got to look like this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of the things that American Stage is able to bring to this was that we're an intimate space. So quite often you'll see Long Day's Journey in a very large house and you don't get to feel like you're in this, stuck in this living room with this family. So that was something that, you know, Brendan Fox really wanted to, he's the director, wanted to bring forth in this as well. Is like, you know, let's play into the fact that the audience is 10 feet away from this drama, this epic drama. And so, you know, the house is not pushed back. You know, the set was actually fairly forward for a lot of our scenery. It was really tight backstage for those actors, but they made it work. And so that's, you know, we wanted to embrace that. And then also being able to strip the idea, concept of this one was be able to strip the color out of the play as the time went on. And so this shot is morning. And so you see there's more color on the floor and stuff like that. But that was all brought by lighting, by Philip Frank and his lighting techniques. And then as the play progresses, all that colored lighting would go away. And it becomes this sort of almost grayscale set, which is really cool.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, and so that was, you know, having to think through all that. And then, you know, there's some tricks to those walls. Those walls were actually scrim walls, so we could see her ascending and descending the stairs and have her be present in that upstairs world where she's, you know, off doing things she shouldn't do. I mean, you've got to kind of think all the way through the end of the play and figure out ways that you can reveal and peel away in a story like this.
Is it particularly challenging to put something on this stage, which is... It's awkward. It's a weird looking space. I mean, let's be honest. It's not a proscenium theater. It's this weird thing.
Not at all. Yeah. It's almost a 3/4 thrust, but not quite.
Okay. Well, that's the terminology. If you say so.
Yeah. 3/4 thrust, you know, you have a stage that comes out and audience is almost on 3 sides of it. And we're only on 2 sides of it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of first designers who design for us for the first time can be a little challenged by the space, and they can design for a proscenium, and then that can kind of exclude some of our seats that are at that funky angle. So luckily I, you know, under Scott Cooper, who's mastered, he mastered this space quite early. Yeah. We kind of figure out where the center line is and where stage center should be. And it's about kicking those sets at an angle and really being able to play to the whole house. You lose a little bit of space when you do it, but it's worth it. It's worth it for blocking. And
I've sat in every, there's all kinds of sweet spots all over the place there. I've sat all over that auditorium. And I forgot to mention the video stuff that you do. I think Pipeline had a lot of video in it.
It did. Yes, a lot of projections.
And that's an interesting thing. I mean, I see American Stage, I think, doing more of that than a lot of people, a lot of the others around here.
How does
that further the story for you? I mean, we can do video here.
Right. I mean, it helps for transitions a lot. It can spice up all those transitions between scenes. But it can also, I mean, when you've got pieces that have such powerful words like that poem that he speaks in the middle of the play.
Oh, yeah.
Being able to put that text on the wall and having the actor interact with the text itself.
Oh, I forgot about that. That was really cool, so powerful.
Yeah. Super powerful. And then he puts his list of 10 things to his 10 rules, you know. Yeah. Also just powerful to be able to put that kind of stuff up. But for me, my constant goal is to push our technology, push our storytelling every year. Great, that show was great. How can we build on that? What's the next step? And part of the reason projections are so important is so many playwrights are writing multi-scene, multi-location plays, and it's fine. It's almost a cinematic way of writing. And so we've got to be able to figure out ways to do those kinds of tricks. And a lot of times projection helps with that. But also it feels, because the world is all on our cell phones and on our computers and on our screens, and the younger generation is so used to it, that especially text messages, I mean, that's a total form of communication now. I mean, it is not, you don't even blink that people are going to text you or call you or, you know. And so being able to incorporate that medium and that way of life on stage just makes it all the more immediate, I think, and all the more present and modern and relevant.
I want to look at two more pictures.
Sure.
Except I pushed the wrong button.
Walk down memory lane.
Yeah, man. If I disappear here, it's because I pushed the wrong button one time too many. I told you we've been recording a lot. I haven't done a live one lately. How much do you have to do with the park shows? Because I have a picture I want to look at.
Yeah. So the park shows, I've actually designed all of the park shows since, what was my first one? Spamalot. So Spamalot was my first park show, and I've been doing them ever since. This is Mamma Mia, which was just, I mean, could that have been the more perfect show to be outside? Mamma Mia automatically set in this Greek island in the courtyard. So we get to have Mother Nature play the stars for us, and Mother Nature help with sunsets and beauty. This set was a lot of fun to do. It was one of the more pretty sets out at the park, I think. It just has an inherent beauty to it, the Greek islands. And it doesn't have to go so many places, which is great. You know, it does take place in more of a Shakespearean kind of world where it's this central courtyard and there's a couple of ancillary locations. But for the most part, you can build one thing and you're there. So that was a blast to design. I asked
Allison and Becca both if they were able to keep their costumes from this scene.
No, we still have those. it's being produced all, I mean, not at the moment, but it's really one of the top produced musicals right now. And so for us to have built this show from scratch, Jill Castle designed and built this show from scratch. And so now we have it and we've already rented it out twice. And so we're able to have a little money stream there. And help other theaters who don't want to build something like this from scratch.
How far had you gotten along with Footloose?
So Footloose was designed and ready to go and half built. So when all this happened, when COVID kind of shut everything down, we were about a week before load-in for parts. So we were about to drive those trucks out to Demon's Landing and start building a stage.
Well, it's very close.
Timon and I had chalked out, the grass was chalked out and ready to go.
So I saw the people downstairs and I knew that Footloose was getting prepped at that point. I was at one of the two shows that you did. You said something really interesting there that I've heard you emphasize before when you talk to the public, whether on video or in talkbacks and stuff, that one of the things that's so great about American Stage doing these mondo productions, and even the more intimate ones, is that everything's done locally.
Yeah.
Right. That I guess the costumes probably aren't stitched up in the back room or anything, but you know. Yeah.
That Mamma Mia costume, that was all built by hand up in our costume shop.
Slap me silly, man. I thought you probably rented those from New York or something.
No. I mean, sometimes we rent costumes, sure. But yeah, we decided, partially because our house is, so if we're talking about on stage, our house is smaller. So we have 5-week runs. That's a long run for a theatrical production, originally. So that makes renting prohibitive sometimes, because you're renting a costume for 7 weeks opposed to renting it for 2 or 3 weeks. So sometimes it's just, you know, more economical for us to build it in house. And so we do that. And Jill's amazing. Jill, and we bring stitchers in sometimes. So we build most of our costumes, if we can, up in the costume shop. So yeah, Mamma Mia completely built and purchased for us from scratch.
I completely learned something new here today. Never let it be said, you know. Yeah, that, one more picture to look at, and this was one of my favorite recent shows, was Silent Sky. And, you know, I've seen stills from other productions where they do the sort of astronomy thing going on here. Right. But it worked so well to be in the middle of this. Mm. And it was such a good cast. And
it was a great cast.
How complicated was it to put all the effects together for this? Because it was going on in lights in different ways. And
yeah, I mean, that was the thing. We really, you know, at its core, this play is about light. And so we wanted to figure out ways, you know, every kind of way we can represent stars in this play that we could.
Yeah.
So from the walls, there was, I mean, probably almost 1,000 holes in the wall had to be drilled individually. And then we placed fiber optics of varying gauges and sizes into all those holes and mapped them all out so we can control certain ones at certain times. That was one of the ways we did represented stars. We also had gobos, which are little metal discs that we slip into lights. So our theatrical lighting instruments were also lighting up stars. And then as a projectionist, I layered on top of all that, moving through space, those images of moving through space and other stars. So we were able to either take them away or build them up. This picture is, you know, the finale where space just explodes everywhere.
Yeah.
But we wanted to have a place to go. So we wanted to make sure we could achieve that big explosion of space at the end, but also have a place to go throughout the play. So we didn't have to just turn them all on or turn them all off, mm-hmm. but we could, you know, just light up one constellation or one little panel.
There were different layers of things all the time to kind of mirror the layers, not only between the scenes, but between the characters and the protagonist changes and changes and life changes that you went through and things and relationships.
Yeah, and her discovery. We wanted to represent the discovery. Yeah.
What a nice show. I hate to say that we're actually out of time. This is absolutely fascinating. Jared Fox, thank you so much. Let's remind folks about the new shorts, which start tomorrow, Thursday, July 2nd. Isn't that right? July 2nd.
I know. What day is
it? And it's live. Live over your Facebook page, on the
website. It's on Zoom. It's on Zoom. And so if you go to our website at americansage.org/virtualstories, I think, you can register for the entire series. So it's every Thursday night at 8 p.m., all through the month of July, two new plays every Thursday. And you'll see the playwrights are going to be joining us, so we can talk to them about these creations, and the actors and the director, everyone will be there for a fun chat. Our first week has Matt McGee as our guest MC. It might be Patty. I'm not sure if it's Matt McGee or Patty who's joining us, but it might be Patty.
You never know, right?
You never know. Yeah. And that's going to be 8 p.m. Thursdays, and it's going to be really exciting, a lot of fun and a good time. Just a quick hour and just, you know, hang out with us and have a cocktail, have some theater. Yeah.
Well, listen, Jared, thank you so much for joining us tonight. An absolute pleasure. I've learned so much. And I'll see you in the real world one of these days, I hope.
One of these days. Thank you so much, Bill.
Take care, man. Bye-bye.
From stpetecatalyst.com.